Okay, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It's annual BRS Sisterhood and Women's Health and Halacha Day is an incredible event. It's really heartening to see so many women and a diverse group of women in attendance. And we're very indebted to Denise and Diane and to our sisterhood for putting on yet another remarkable program. They asked me to participate and to teach one of the sessions, and they shared a list of the different titles of sessions. And I saw sandwich in one of them. I got so excited. I said, sandwiches? Sounds great. So our title, our topic for today is the sandwich generation. And for those who don't understand what that means, although I imagine you do if you chose this session among the others, the sandwich generation are the peanut butter and jelly who are squeezed between the two slices of bread. One slice of bread represented by children, growing, sometimes adult children who continue to place demands financially, emotionally, in terms of time and otherwise. And the other slice of bread are aging parents or parent who also can place demands on time, energy, finances, and other types of resources. And there are people who are squeezed in between. And unfortunately, they're squeezed in between. They're the middle of that sandwich in a stage in their own lives in which they were anticipating having a certain flexibility and freedom and enjoyment. They're at a stage in their lives, in their 40s or 50s, where their children are grown. They're no longer waking up in the middle of the night. They're no longer changing diapers. They're no longer having to find babysitters. And instead of having the freedom and flexibility, instead of finding their groove in this stage of life in which they finally thought they could focus on themselves, specifically when they thought they could focus on themselves after years of selflessly caring for others, the sandwich generation is squeezed still in a position to have to care for others. So in the first four pages, I just share with you the results of a Pew Research Center study talking about the sandwich generation. And here, I'm just going to read some of the highlights of it, some of the statistics, just to give us a context of the population we're talking about, some of the challenges they face. Then we're going to go through some of the halachic considerations, halachic conflicts between caring for aging parents, caring for growing, mature adult children. And then we're going to talk about some practical coping suggestions. So Pew Research Center, nearly half, 47% of adults in their 40s and 50s have a parent age 65 or older and are either raising a young child or financially supporting a grown child. About 1 in 7 middle-aged adults is providing financial support to both an aging parent and a child. So 50% of those who are in their 40s and 50s have both a parent over 65 and have children. That's a large statistic and it's not surprising. But there's only about 15% who financially are the sandwich generation, providing financial support both to an aging parent and a child. Couple paragraphs down. According to a new nationwide Pew Research Center survey, 48% of adults 40 to 59 have provided some financial support to at least one grown child in the past year, with 27% providing the primary support. While middle-aged adults are devoting more resources to their grown children these days, the survey finds that the public places more value on support for aging parents than on support for grown children. Among all adults, 75% say adults have a responsibility to provide financial assistance to an elderly parent who is in need. Only 52% say parents have a similar responsibility to support a grown child, which is a fascinating statistic. It means that people are more sympathetic and they feel a greater sense of obligation to continue to financially support an aging parent than they do a grown child whom they feel is at a stage in life that they should really be independent and really be taking themselves. They have more sympathy for the aging parent, who also theoretically should be independent, but they understand the aging process, and they understand that the parent may not be able to care for themselves. Adults who are part of the sandwich generation, that is those who have a living parent age 65 or older and are either raising a child under age 18 or supporting a grown child, are pulled in many directions. Not only do many provide care and financial support to their parents and their children, but nearly 4 in 10, 38%, say both their grown children and their parents rely on them for emotional support. So only 15% of the sandwich generation are crunched financially in both directions, but a much higher percentage is crunched emotionally, feeling that they're being drained, they're being pulled upon, they're being called upon emotionally, both by aging parents and by adult children. If you turn the next page, he talks about being in the sandwich generation could be a bit stressful. Having an age, you think, Having an aging parent, you didn't need a research study for that. Having an aging parent while still raising or supporting one's own children presents certain challenges not faced by other adults. Caregiving and financial and emotional support, to name just a few. However, the survey suggests that adults in the sandwich generation, this was interesting, are just as happy with their lives overall as other adults. Which either makes you feel really guilty right now, or I'm not sure what it does. But it's fascinating that the survey showed that even though this sandwich generation population is somewhat unfairly having to share emotionally and financially in both directions, they're just as happy. 31% say they are very happy with their lives. An additional 52% say they're pretty happy. Happiness rates are nearly the same among adults who are not part of the sandwich generation. 28% are very happy and 51% are pretty happy. It happens to be sad, just overall, the statistics, how few people are happy with their lives, whether you're in the sandwich generation or for whatever reason. But that's a topic for another time. I don't want to take all of our time by going through this. I provided the article for you so that you could read it in full. But you'll see, it goes through happiness statistics, emotional, financial, time, beyond finances, providing care and emotional support, boomers moving out of the sandwich generation, and many of the statistics of those who find themselves. So this is our topic. Our topic that we're going to try to discuss is both philosophically what it means to be in the sandwich generation. Is it, in fact, an unfair position to be in? Is it a liability? Is it a something which drains you? Or perhaps we can change the paradigm and see those who are in the sandwich generation to a certain degree being very fortunate, being very blessed, being in an incredible position to be that source, to be that anchor, to be that incredible place of help in both directions. So let's go through Kibbutz Ve'em a little bit. Because really with the sandwich generation, when a person is conflicted, what they're conflicted between is the obligation to honor parents with all that that entails, and the obligation of a parent towards children. This could be a 10-part series, and we could expand upon these obligations, and we could analyze them. It's less clear in terms of children. Certainly there's an obligation of chinuch, we have to educate children. Certainly there's an obligation to provide for young children. The question becomes children who are adult children. What is the continuing obligation when there's an adult child who lives in the home, an adult child who continues to need financial support? And even there, we could debate, what does it mean to be an adult child? Once upon a time in halacha, an adult child was after 12 and 13 years old. After a bar and bat mitzvah, you have the maturity to be independent, to take care of yourself. Today, Rav Moshe Feinstein discusses and others, that's obviously changed when they're still mandated legally to be in a school setting well beyond that age. But what about children who are in college? What about a parent who is conflicted between paying their children's college tuition to ease the burden from their children so they don't have to take student loans, or to cover their cell phone bill, or their car lease, or their apartment? And on the other hand, they have an aging parent who needs an aide, or an aging parent who needs to be in an assisted living facility, or an aging parent whose long-term health care policy doesn't provide for them the support that they need, and that sandwich generation parent is conflicted where to direct their resources, where to direct their time, and so on. So much of it stems around this question of kibbutz av ve'em. Yes?
I have a question. When you don't have parents yourself, but you have in-laws, it's the same kind.
We're going to get to that. Okay. In-laws. Yeah, we're going to get to in-laws. Okay, sources number one. Source number one has two sources, Shmos Chaf and Dvarim Hei. Both are the Aseres Adibros, the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments. And both famously the fifth commandment, Kabedes Avicha Ve'asimecha L'man Ya'arichun Yamecha Al Adama Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosein Lach. Honor your father and your mother so that you have longevity on the land that God gives you. The second time, there are two extra clauses, two phrases that are added. Honor your father and your mother as God commanded you. That's not in the first phrase. Kasher tzivcha Hashem Elokecha. Again, l'man yarichun yamecha, longevity. U'l'man yitavlach, so it will be good for you on the land that God gives you. These two extra clauses are not insignificant. Kasher tzivcha Hashem Elokecha, as God commanded you, and l'man yitavlach, so that it will be good for you. I refer you to the Nitziv, who has a comment on these two clauses, but we don't have time in this context to deal with it. But I want to point you to the Abarbanel. The Pasuk makes a promise. Says the Pasuk, if you honor your father and your mother, if you honor your father and your mother, l'man yarichun yamecha. There's only a couple of mitzvahs in the whole Torah where the reward is given with the command, and this is one of them. And the reward is longevity. L'man yarichun yamecha. Now, if you're like me, you're troubled by this pasuk because you know somebody who honored their parents incredibly, who tragically died young, prematurely, who didn't live to 120 or to celebrate their 100 or their 90th or their 80th birthday. So what happened to the promise? If you honor your parents, if you care for them, that you will achieve longevity, that you'll be here in this world for such a long time. And the Abar Benel is bothered by this question in source number 2. Says the Abar Benel, he gives the first answer having to do with the quantity of time. But then he writes, Hakavana Hashenis, the second understanding of this pasuk, and this is such a critical understanding. Ba'amro lamanya richun yamecha, we're halfway down in the source number 2. When it says that you'll have longevity, eino le'inyan aschar. He's not talking about the quantity. Says the Abar Benel, an unbelievable principle. The promise of the Man Yarichun Yamecha is as follows. It's very simple. It's a very simple formula. The way that you take care of your parents is the way your children are going to take care of you. You make your children someone else's problem. You ignore and neglect your parents. You rely on the neighbors in the neighborhood. You pay someone to take care of them. You barely check in. You barely visit. You don't care. Then be ready and anticipate that that is the default, that that is the bar that you've set for the way your children will relate to you. But on the other hand, if you go above and beyond, if you're selfless, if you put yourself out, if you show care and concern on a regular, consistent basis for your parents, and your children observe and see and feel, and sometimes are even negatively affected as a result, but whatever you've cost your children by neglecting them to care for your parent is an investment in your future, because you have modeled and you've educated for your children how they will care for you. My grandfather, Alav HaShalom, lived with us the last 8 years of his life. After my grandmother passed away and his health was failing, and he moved in with our family. And we were in formidable years. I was in high school at the time. I was incredibly close with my grandfather. And there was no question, you know, I was talking to my mother yesterday about this topic, the sandwich generation. She reminded me, I even forgot, that it was my birthday. I was supposed to go for my driver's test, the day everybody waits for, and my mother couldn't take me because my grandfather had to go to the hospital. That's the sandwich generation. But you know what? So I had to wait an extra day or an extra week to get my license. But what I learned about priorities, and what I learned about selflessness, and what I learned about care, and whatever compromises we made in our home by having aides live with us, which cost us privacy, by having conflicts for my parents' time and attention and resources, by having the thermostat set much higher than we would have wanted, but whatever compromises we were forced to make were well worth the lessons of Kibud Av V'Em that we weren't taught with lip service, we were taught with modeling. And so the first lesson for the sandwich generation is that rather than feel kind of pulled in two directions and conflicted and guilty, understand that every time you're caring for your parents, you're not neglecting your children. Maybe in the short term you are, but in the long term, you're giving them the greatest gift you can. And that is what it means to model Kivud Av V'Em, what it means to model values, what it means to model priorities. And of course, it's a balance. I'm not suggesting, therefore, every time neglect the children, every time the children are on their own, every time the children come second. Of course, there's a balance, and it takes common sense. And it takes, it's a very delicate situation. But what I'm trying to suggest is don't feel guilty. Says the Abar Benel, the peanut butter and jelly in that sandwich should not feel guilty if one slice of bread is taking the majority of the flavor because the other slice of bread is benefiting. It may not have the flavor that day, but it is being marinated for the future. Okay, that's the Abar Benel. Yeah, there was a question in the back. Great, we're going to come to that. You know what, I'm going to ask everyone to hold the questions because we're going to try to get to a lot of this, but I'm used to giving classes for a lot longer than what I was allotted, so we're going to try to squeeze in as much as we can. Source number 3, the Sefer HaChinuch. When one honors parents, not only are they modeling for their children, the other slice of bread, what it means to honor parents, but they're modeling something even more fundamental. You know that honoring parents is the 5th of the 10 commandments, but if you break up, as we are told to do, the commandments into 2 groupings, those between us and God and those between us and man, which is honoring father and mother? It's the 5th commandment. Which luach, which tablet does it find itself on? Under which category? Between man and God. Why would honoring parents be between man and God if it presents itself as an interpersonal mitzvah between myself and my parents. And the Sefer HaChinuch writes so beautifully, we're going to do a lot of these sources outside because of a lack of time, but the Sefer HaChinuch writes so beautifully that whenever you honor your parents, you are in fact honoring God. There are three partners in the creation of man: the mother, the father, and the Almighty himself, without whom that child could not be born, would not be born, would not be healthy. When one honors their parent, they're not only honoring two-thirds of the partnership, they're honoring the entire partnership. And Rav Dessler spells this out a little bit further in the next source, source number four, in the fourth volume of Michtav Me'eliyahu. When Rav Dessler says, "Mitame mitzvos kibara ve'em, hakaras hatov ke'adua." Of course, the logical motivator for honoring parents is gratitude. You would not be here without them. And they're imperfect, they have their idiosyncrasies, they're difficult. True, everybody has their idiosyncrasies. Everybody has their difficulties. The older people get, the more pronounced they become. But never, ever forget, ever, that you wouldn't be here. Not just you wouldn't be here if they failed to have the union that conceived you, but you wouldn't be here if they left you on someone else's doorstep or they put you out with the dumpster. You wouldn't be here if they weren't waking up in the middle of the night and nursing you or feeding you or changing your diaper and paying your tuition and sending you to camp and clothing you and all the things that brought you to today with their idiosyncrasies and difficulties and challenges that have only become more pronounced with time. But you wouldn't be here. Hakaras hatov, gratitude, is what drives kibud av v'em. And so says Rav Dessler, what happens? You know, people like to live their lives facing forward in kind of a linear image of time. The timeline, you know, behind you on the line is the past. The point of time on the line that you are now is the present. And the line going forward is the future. And most people like to look forward. And they feel a sense of independence. I am now my own person. I make my own way. I'm independent. I look forward on this timeline. I don't need anyone else. Comes the Torah and it says, Kibud av v'em. Hey buddy, stop. I want you to turn around. And I want you to notice right behind you on the timeline, there's two people. And without them, you wouldn't be where you are and you wouldn't have that future that you envision. And those two people are your mom and your dad. And you owe them gratitude and you owe them honor. So says Rav Dessler, you know what's going to happen? When you pause on that timeline and you turn around and look over your shoulder, you see your mom and dad, who are you going to see behind them? You're going to see your grandparents and what you owe them. And you're going to see your great-grandparents and your great-great-grandparents. And when you look all the way back in the distance, who's at the end of that line? The Almighty Himself, the Ribono Shel Olam. So therefore, every act of honoring your parents, the implicit sense of gratitude and appreciation and recognition that as much as you want to feel independent, you are in fact utterly dependent and wouldn't be here without them, when you take a moment to reflect on that and to act and to execute that appreciation through honor, then you're going to see all the way in the back of that timeline is the Almighty Himself, that third partner without whom you would not be here. So the fifth commandment is on the side, Bein Adam L'Makom, because implicit in every act of honoring parents is in fact honoring the Almighty Himself. And so that sandwich generation who feel conflicted between their children and their parents, when they have to place priority on parents, they're not only, in the words of the Abarbanel, modeling honor for later. It's not only an investment in your own future, but you're also modeling honoring the Almighty, the Ribono Shel Olam. You're also modeling Yirat Shamayim. You're also reinforcing these values that are so dear and precious to us. When your children see that what motivates you to honor parents is a sense of hakaras hatov, is a sense of gratitude, is a feeling of dependence, is relying on the Ribono Shel Olam. And so again, what I'm trying to communicate is to allay any sense of guilt, to allay that sense of feeling horrible that one has to neglect children to pay attention to parents, because in fact, by paying attention to parents, you're not neglecting children. You're teaching lessons, a lesson about kibud av v'em, and a lesson about kavod shamayim, a lesson about how to honor God Himself. Who is obligated in kibud av v'em? Source 5, the Shulchan Aruch tells us, Echad ha'ish ve'echad ha'isha shavim mikavod emorah shel av v'em. A man and woman are equally obligated in kibud av v'em towards their parents. Source number 6 tells us, this question was raised a moment ago, Chayv adam l'chabed chamav. One is obligated to honor their in-laws, not just their parents, but they're obligated to honor their in-laws. And the Sefer Charedim, I think, writes so beautifully, the author of Yedid Nefesh, Rav Elazar Azkari, one of the great Kabbalists of Tzfat in the 16th century. In the Sefer Charedim, he writes the following. Ha'isha chayav b'chvod chamiv v'chamoso. A person is obligated to honor not only their parents. When my grandfather moved into our house, it was easy for my mother. It's her own father. But what about for my father, who had to give up his privacy, who had to give up financial resources, who had to give up? That too, there's an obligation to honor one's in-laws. And where does that come from? Listen to what he writes so beautifully. Taima mishum de'ish v'ishtu kachad gufa chashive. Va'av ve'em shalzeh, ka'av ve'em shalzeh. A person who hesitates to honor their in-laws needs to really reflect on their marriage. If you struggle to honor your in-laws, it perhaps reveals a flaw, it reveals a challenge in marriage. Because a marriage in which one feels they're two halves of a whole, a marriage in one feels, ishto kegufo, that you're one essence, that your lives are now intertwined entirely. When you feel your lives are intertwined, when you feel that you're two halves that found their whole, that means that everything comes with it. The good, the bad, and the in-laws. It comes, everything. Everything comes with it. And to make one spouse feel guilty, to make one spouse feel bad, to make one spouse hesitate to be able to honor his or her in-laws is going to leave a blemish, a negative impact on the marriage. So says the Sefer Charedim, the obligation to honor in-laws to a certain degree extends from the obligation to honor your spouse. If you love your spouse, you won't give them a hard time about their parents. You think they don't know their flaws and their challenges and their idiosyncrasies and their difficulties? They lived with it longer than you did. They know it. But they love them. It's their parents. They gave them life. They have that Hakar Satov. If you love your spouse, you will not make them feel guilty to honor his or her parents. It doesn't mean you can't sometimes vent. It doesn't mean you can't sometimes vent together about both parents and in-laws. First of all, just a marriage tip. It never works well to suggest that your parents are perfect. It's just the other party's parents who are flawed. The more that you're willing to recognize that all parents are flawed, the more likely they'll be receptive to venting about their parents being flawed. But says the Sefer Charedim, the attitude towards in-laws very much reflects the attitude of marriage itself. Okay, he says more here. I already see that we're going to run out of time. The Sefer Chassidim says that even quotes from the Chidah, even if a parent is willing to forego their honor, nevertheless there's an obligation. Midinei Shamayim, one should still honor. So a parent says, you have young children, you have things you need to do, don't worry about me, let me go, go on without me. Even though they seem to forego or forfeit the honor they're due, one still has to do honor. The Chayei Adam, in source number 9, says that honoring parents takes three forms. B'machshava, b'maisa, u'v'dibur. Honoring parents is in your thoughts. If you're constantly feeling negative thoughts, you're wishing poor, you're looking at their negative attributes, b'machshava, even in thought, there's an obligation to honor parents. B'maisa, certainly in action. And b'dibur, the way we speak about our parents. Rav Aviner, the chief rabbi of Beit El, the Rosh Hashiva of Ateret Kohanim, has a series of tshuvas in his response to She'ela Shlomo, where he talks about the conflicts that arise. Oh, thank you so much. The conflicts that arise in Kibbur Aveim. So here he lists 10 questions, and then he tries to answer them. We don't have time to go through them carefully. You could look at them. But they all have to do with unfair pressure parents are placing on children, and children feeling squeezed by those parents. For example, is a parent entitled to tell the child who to use as the mo'el for the grandchild, or what to name the grandchild? You know, that's an element of being a sandwich generation too, is that parents are telling you where the grandchildren should go to school, what their hobbies should be, how they should be dressing, who their friends should be, who they should use as a mo'el, what name you should give them. There's an element of being a sandwich generation in that conflict between the two generations that surround you. Is a parent entitled to tell children, I want you to daven with me and come to my shul, I need you to come every Shabbos, I want you to call? Are they allowed to tell them who to spend different yontifs with? Are they allowed to tell them all these questions he goes through? And if you look on the bottom column, the bottom paragraph on the right hand column on page 9, Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, she'akol nehi bevaro. He says, parents, the obligation to honor parents does not give license to parents to interfere in the lives of their children. And Rav Aviner says that the pasuk, in fact, gives the license to the child. The Torah tells, when Hashem tells Adam, the institution of marriage, It says, not go get married and it's wonderful, you and your wife and your parents, it'll be kumbaya. It says, Al ken ya'azov ish es aviv ve'esimo. The prerequisite, kind of the foundation of marriage is ya'azov. Not in a, you know, negative way, it's time to abandon, it's time to escape, but ya'azov, it's time, let's put it this way, it's time to graduate. A person should graduate their parents, v'davak b'ishto. And they now have formed a new nuclear family with whom to make decisions and forge a destiny and create a life and create a lifestyle. And says Rav Aviner, parents should of course continue to be a positive influence. A parent's job is never done. They should be a source of support, of positive influence, of wisdom, of advice, but never of interference. Never of contributing or creating any daylight between the husband and wife, the children themselves. And that's what he continues now when he answers the left-hand column. The obligation of kibbut ave'im is that your parent needs to be fed, your parent needs to be clothed, your parent needs to get them their slippers, your parent needs to be provided for, but it has to affect the parent. The parent is not entitled to demand something of the child that doesn't directly affect the guf of the parent. So, for example, there's tshuvas that deal with the question, is a parent entitled to tell the child not to marry somebody they want to marry? And the tshuvas say, absolutely not. That's not kibbut ave'im, because that doesn't directly affect the parent. Now you'll say it directly affects the parent who can't sleep at night, and who has to see a therapist, and who's distraught, and so on and so forth. But in a direct sense, it's not depriving the parent of food, drink, clothing, and so on. And so Rav Aviner tries to lay out in that paragraph that there are times that children can respectfully tell their parent that they don't have to go in the way that's suggested by the parent, or they don't have to respond and act according to the command of the parent. He says, "Ein l'sarev lahem b'chutzpah, ela ba'anava uvehachna'a." One should take a pass on what the parent is asking with humility and in a reverential way, never with a sense of chutzpah, but kibbut ave'im doesn't demand. And the reason I'm sharing this is because that sandwich generation, one of the principal challenges that comes up is that the middle of that sandwich starts to neglect themselves. They put themselves, not even second, they're putting themselves maybe fourth or fifth on the long line of people to whom they're obligated. They're trying to take care of their parents while they also have to care about their children. They're also worried about how their spouse is. They may go to work, they may have friends, they may have communal obligations. And when it comes to their own health, mental, physical, emotional, financial, they're all the way down in the line because they've put everyone else first. Kibbut ave'im shouldn't come at the expense of one's own well-being. We're going to talk about this Wednesday night. We're beginning a new series, a four-part series on being the best version of yourself, of drawing from the seven habits of highly effective people and good to great and exceptionalism and so on, Wednesday night. And 8 o'clock, Wednesday night. Everybody's invited. So one of the principles we'll talk about is, it's called protecting the asset. The greatest asset you have is yourself. So if you're not healthy, you can't acquire or protect other assets, other things that are important to you. The idea of protecting the asset is about yourself. So Rav Aviner says, kibbut ave'im never demands you forfeiting your emotional well-being, your mental well-being, and so on. There are people who allow themselves to be driven literally crazy. There are people who compromise and submit, they forfeit their own well-being in order to take care of the different slices of the sandwich, and that's never something that should happen. On the other hand, that can't be abused. You know, a person can't say, well, it's cramping my lifestyle and I want to be able to have all my time to shop in manis and petties and this and that. They're cramping my lifestyle, I'm not interested in them. It obviously has to be within reason that you say, or it's unreasonable what's being asked of me, it's so negative on me that one has to protect the asset, one has to care about themselves. He says in the paragraph where he says number two, "Ein mitzvah kibbut ave'im levaker etzal horim. Im ahorim zkukim leezra ma'asish shel bneim, machal mashke malbish machasa machnis umotzi, bevada yuchayef, av bebikur shel ava ubekovet ein chova." Let's say a parent says, "You don't visit me enough. I need you to fly up here every weekend. I want you to be here every bath time, dinner time. I want you to be with me, not with them." Is there an obligation of kibbut ave'im for a parent to demand, "You have to visit me"? Says Rav Aviner, that's not included in kibbut ave'im. Kibbut ave'im is if they say, "I'm hungry, I have nothing to eat, and I have no way to get food." You have an obligation to bring food to your parent. That's machil and mashed and so on. But if they say, I like your time. I like playing Rummy Cub with you. I like passing the time with you. I want you to watch Judge Wapner with me. I want you to whatever. So that it's a lovely thing to do, and a person should try to do it. But it's not included in Kibbutz Av'eim that one should feel guilty if they're trying to set boundaries to their time and they're trying to set boundaries to their expectations. Okay, there's so much to talk about here. If you turn to page 10, number 9, he continues. Yes, Rakein. Achar she'adam mischatein, hu v'ishto ne'apachim la'adam echad. After a couple get married, they are one solid unit. V'aleim l'tachas darchei chayim mitoch ta'avam, sicha meshutefes. Through communication, they should forge their own life. Diyun chavshi v'akshava kinag ischashus. Mirabiz mitoch ava v'ach v'shalom v'reyes v'yachad yismodaduim she'ilos v'yitpatru osam yachad. One should never try to resolve things on their own. So in measuring and weighing the obligation towards one's parents and one's children, one should never feel the burden is on them alone. The reason one is married is to have another half of the whole, is to have that union, that integration, to be able to communicate and to share, to feel comfortable, to have a safe space to share. Here's where I'm feeling conflicted. How is it impacting you? How is it not impacting you? What can we do together? How should we handle this best? What should we do for Yontif? Or what do we do with our limited funds? Or what do we do with our vacation time? And never to feel the burden or shoulder the burden on themselves. The reason for marriage is to become a unit that shares the burden together. Gam im ha'orim misnahagim betzura lo nechona b'chosos chayavim l'chabir osam apirov i'efshar l'shanos anashim b'vugarim el tzarech l'kabir osam k'mo sheheim v'lum odlachios b'tarayim eila b'li lihin hazeg. Says Rav Aviner, most often we can't change adult people. The parents are likely, who they are is likely how they'll stay. But we should accept people with their faults and do our best to honor them no matter how they are. He has further tshuvas. If you turn to the next page, and here he talks about another conflict. Yesh vikuach beini levein ishti, the top right of the page. He says, I'm having an argument between me and my wife. Ha'isi rotza shahori yaguru etzlenu babayis. I want my parents to come live with me. Yesh lanu babayis yechidat meis she'efshar lates lahem. We have available space that they could live. Machpid alai ma'od l'nsa pa'mayim b'shavua b'chatzi kol yom. It takes me half a day, twice a week, to go visit them. It's an unfair burden for me to visit them. I can't do it. It would be much easier on them and much easier on me if my parents would move in with us. But the wife says, "Move in? Why, are you out of your mind? Parents move in with us? We have young children. We have a relationship. We have privacy." So Rav Aviner answers the following. Ishtecha tzodeket. Your wife is right. In this circumstance. Not always. In this circumstance. We quoted this pasuk earlier, that the institution of marriage is presented as an exercise of graduating one's parents' home. The Radak, Rav David Kimchi, writes on that pasuk, Sheyesh lagur b'nifrad. What does it mean, Al ken yazov ishes aviv v'zimo? What does it mean to graduate? It means to live separately. Now, by the way, for some that means live separately in another continent. For some it means another country. For some it means another city. For some it means another block. But minimally it means another home. Not to be living together on top of one another. It's an unhealthy atmosphere. And the Radak says, the fact that the Torah says, Ya'azov ish, that you should live separately, doesn't mean that you're not obligated to honor. Of course you're obligated. So Rav Aviner paskins to the husband, tough luck, buddy. You've got to travel a large distance. That's what Kibbutz Av'eim requires, demands of you. But your obligation to your wife and your young children is to protect their privacy, to protect their independence, and not to have your parents live with you. Now Rav Aviner here was talking about, doesn't seem that he's talking about infirm parents who need the support. Sounds like it was just talking about, wouldn't it be, you know, kumbaya, lovely, we all live together, and it'll be fantastic. We'll get to the question in a moment about what if a parent needs that more intensive support. He has further tshuvos. We don't have time. You can take a look at them.
Is this translated into English?
I don't have it in English. I don't think it exists in English. But maybe in another context, we can try to go through it a little slower and get through it a little bit more carefully. On page 12, on the right-hand column, tshuva resh gimel, he deals with the question of parents with health who's failing. My mother's health is failing. And what do I do feeling squeezed between my obligation to my mother and my obligation to my children? And here he writes, tshuva, misupara Rav Asi shaisa lo'ima zakena. Rav Asi had a mother who was elderly. Amra lo sherotza tachshitin. She said, I want jewelry. So he got her jewelry. She said, I want to get married. He said, I'll go look for a husband for you. She said, I want to marry you. You're handsome. So he ran and he made Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. That's the Gemara. The Tosfos Ri HaZaken explains, Hikir shenitra fadaita ubarach shelo yuchal latzeis yidei shamayim. He realized that his mother had dementia. His mother had Alzheimer's. His mother was suffering mental challenges. And he left her because he didn't feel he had the capacity to honor her in that state. And the Rambam writes, "Mishenitra fadaito shel avi v'shel imo." If a parent experiences dementia, memory loss, "Mishtadel linhog imam kefi datam ad sheyirucham aleihem." One should extend themselves with compassion and sympathy and love and flexibility and do what's necessary to care for them. "V'efsher lo lamod." And if it's impossible, because sometimes a parent in that situation becomes abusive, sometimes it becomes simply too difficult physically, emotionally, then he says, pay, set up a situation where others can care for them. The Ravid disagrees with this. Rambam says, what do you mean? How could you ever do kibbut av ha'em through a shliach? You can't pay someone else to do it for them. But all the poskim don't understand the Ravid and say, the Rambam is correct, that a person primarily should try to show the sympathy, the care, the concern, but if they feel they're incapable, meaning it'll compromise their own well-being, they're in an abusive relationship, or emotionally, financially, the drain and the strain is such that it'll compromise their own well-being, then they are entitled to be able to not neglect the parent, but to be able to set the parent up so that someone else can care for them. Rav Sternbach also has a tshuva, source 11, page 13. He deals with the question of honoring grandparents. And for the sandwich generation, honoring grandparents is a very important question. Because essentially, when you're stuck in the middle of that sandwich, your parents don't have an obligation to honor your children, but your children share your obligation to honor your parents, which also adds to the formula when you're trying to calculate how to spend your money and your time. The grandchildren share in the parents' obligation vis-a-vis the grandparents, while the grandparents do not share in it vis-a-vis the children. And here Rav Sternbach is dealing with this question of the obligation on grandchildren to honor grandparents. He's getting into the lumdas of it. Is it an obligation to honor your parents? So of course you have to honor your grandparents. It's one of the ways that you honor your parent. Or is there an independent parallel obligation to honor grandparents? And what might a nafkamina, a practical difference, would be? What if a person's parent predeceases their grandparent? If the obligation was through the parent, then the obligation no longer exists. If it's an independent parallel obligation, then they remain obligated to honor. But for our purposes, in terms of the sandwich generation, it's something to think about and to communicate. In the spirit of the Abar Benel, the Sefer Achinach, and Rav Dessler that we saw, we're educating our children and saying, join me, be a partner with me. Yes, your grandparents have to move in with us, or your grandfather. Or yes, Sundays you don't see me because I'm going to the home. Or yes, we can't take the luxurious vacation right now at this stage of our life because we're also providing an aid for Bubby or Zadie or Oma Opa, Saba Safta. But you know what? You're my partner in Kibbut Av Ve'Em. This is your mitzvah too. And look at the Hakaras HaTov collectively we're showing for the family we have and the kavod that we're giving to the Almighty Himself. So children, again, it goes back to the Abar Benel. If grandchildren perceive their parent as being negative and toxic and critical and miserable and depressed and guilty, then why would they want to care? You know what they're saying to themselves? When mom and dad get to this stage, I'm sending them away. If they're, look how miserable my parent is. Look what a burden this is on them. Look how much they've given up of their life for this. So you know what? When they hit this stage of life, I'm already right now putting aside a deposit on the home that I'm going to send them to. Whereas if grandchildren perceive the parent, what a opportunity, what a mitzvah, what a privilege to care for my parents. Is it difficult? Yes. Is it burdensome? Yes. But you know what? So is raising young children. So are so many things in life that are the greatest blessing. To be in a position to have aging and elderly parents, to be in a position to be able to give them time and resources. The way the grandchildren perceive what they're hearing from the parents is exactly the attitude they're going to bring when their parents get a little bit older. I want to look at four halachic decisions of Rav Avadia, and then I want to get to the practical coping skills to wrap it up. On page 14, in different, Yalkut Yosef on Kibbut Av Ve'Em is a thick, thick volume. And this is not from one chapter, it's from many chapters in the book. But it all comes from the Yalkut Yosef on Kibbut Av Ve'Em. So first, Mem Gimel. In Kiyum Mitzvahs Kibbut Avayim Goremes L'metichos Beino Levein Ishto V'Hadavar Gorem L'Afra B'Shalom Bayis Patrim L'Kayim HaMitzvah. If there's a conflict between honoring parents and your own Shalom Bayis, your own Shalom Bayis comes first. That's counterintuitive. Often a person will say to their spouse, you know what? I don't care if it means you're upset at me. I have to honor my parents. And too bad, we'll figure it out so we don't have Shalom Bayis. My first responsibility is to my parent. Says Rav Avadya, obviously it's not ideal. You should all work things out and have harmony and be on the same page, and that's part of love and marriage. But if there's a conflict that's not resolvable, and there's a choice between Shalom Bayis at home or honoring parents, Shalom Bayis at home comes first. Kishiyev Shalom Lekayim Ayideh Shliach. Okay, number two, next paragraph. Ideally, when a parent gets elderly and infirm, one should not send them to live in a home. Ideally, one should bring them to live in your home. You've then created an incubator for mitzvos, for chesed. You've created literally like a... It's a house of chesed. But if by absorbing the parents into the home, there'll be no space, it'll compromise Shalom Bayis, or you can't care for the parents the way they need, the activities, the attention, nobody's home the whole day, then or you live in a different city, then in that situation, there's nothing wrong. One should not feel guilty if in that circumstance they need to put them in a home. Or the parent says, you know what, I don't want to live in your house. It's so nice that you want to have an incubator of chesed. I'm not interested in being your subject of chesed. And I heard the sugar-free cookies are better at the home. At the home, they've got the sing-along every afternoon at 2 o'clock. I want to go there. In that circumstance, if the father can't afford to live in the home and the son, the child, has the wherewithal, the child then should help provide the financial sustenance. Even though generally we paskin that kibbut avayim is mishal av, that you're obligated to provide for your parent, but they have to pay for it, that's generally, Gemara has a debate. Does the money come from the parent or from the child? And the conclusion is it comes from the parent, generally. But in this circumstance, Rav Avadya is saying, if the parent doesn't have, and the child has the wherewithal, and it works out better for both parties to be in the home, then the parent, then the child should help provide. Number three, third paragraph. Chola b'machalas Alzheimer. Shadaito miturefes alav. Va'ben muchan l'achziko b'veso l'tapo bo. Ach barulo b'vado sh'lefamin lo yuchal lishlo ba'atzmo. V'isparet v'itzak alaviv sh'lo kedin. K'shiyas amas l'shtus. So a parent has Alzheimer's, and the child's prepared to take the parent into the home, but the child knows that after the thousandth time of repeating themselves, when the parent's forgotten, or after abuse, verbal abuse they've taken, that they're not going to be able to control themselves from lashing out at their parent. If it's still better for the parent to be in your home, take the parent into the home and daven that you not that you have the patience and the forbearing and the energy to withstand and to absorb whatever comes your way and not to lash out. But if you really fear you're going to lash out and not be able to provide a supportive, loving environment, then better to put them in a home where they can be cared for properly. Fourth paragraph. Here's a real sandwich. I was looking. There's no tshuvas for the sandwich generation. I was looking all over. This is the closest I came. Rav Avadya says, you have an elderly parent and you have a young daughter. And your elderly parent says, I want you to send your young daughter to live with me so she can take care of me. Forget helping clean the dishes in your house. Forget giving a bath to her younger brother in your house. I want her to come live with me and care for me. You should forfeit the help your daughter could be to you and let her help her grandfather. Now again, there's a lot of variables there. Which is the best environment for her? Where will she have her freedom? How can she grow? And so on. But assuming all else is equal with those variables, he said, kibbut avayim demands going to the grandparent. So we saw The mitzvah, we saw the Pew Research statistics about the sandwich generation, how many people are in that category, the level of happiness, financial burden, emotional sharing, and so on. Then we saw Kibbud Av V'Eim, the reason for Kibbud Av V'Eim. We saw some of the halachic conflicts of Kibbud Av V'Eim in the Rav Aviner, Rav Sternbach, and Rav Avadya. And what I want to close with the last couple of minutes are some suggestions of coping skills in a very practical way for people who find themselves in this situation of the sandwich generation. And the first may be a little counterintuitive, and the first I say somewhat carefully because people can go overboard and abuse it. But the first piece of advice is, don't forget to love yourself. People who are overflowing with love for others can often do it at the expense of loving themselves. Sfas Emes says on the mitzvah of Yahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, that we have an obligation to love others, but says the Sfas Emes, the prerequisite to that mitzvah, the foundation of that mitzvah, before you love others, the Yahavta L'Reacha how?
Kamocha.
First you have to love yourself. If you don't take care of yourself, if you're not well yourself, if you're not empowered, if you're not strong yourself, then you can't love and take care of others. So if you have to l'recha, kamocha. When you're in that sandwich generation and you're running and running and running between parents and children and parents and children and parents and children, and you're neglecting sleep and you're neglecting, you know how many times I see a caregiver who is heroic in the care they're providing for another, or the spouse, or their parent, and they'll always often slip by and say, how are you doing? Are you taking care of yourself? They'll say, well, I have a problem that I'm supposed to be taking care of, but I'll get to the doctor, I'll have that surgery, I'll start the therapy later. And they're neglecting their sleep, neglecting going to a doctor, neglecting getting a procedure, neglecting taking care of bills, and they're racking up debt, neglecting. If one is loving others at the expense of loving themselves, they won't be able to care for the people around them any longer. It's going to be two slices of bread with nothing in between, because that which is in between is going to be squeezed out. So number one is not forgetting to love yourself before you love those around you. Now again, you can't go overboard with that. Well, loving myself means that I disappear every weekend, I go on vacation, I need this, that. I'm not talking about loving yourself to the extreme in an unhealthy way. I'm talking about the minimal ways we have to love ourselves to be in a healthy position. The Vilna Gaon, the Gror, Rav Elio Kramer of Vilna, Tuesday night, this Great Rivalries course Tuesday night is on the great rivalry between the Vilna Gaon and the Hasidic movement. Very excited about it. Teaching that Tuesday night, 7:30. So the Vilna Gaon here writes, V'davak b'ishto, on those words we saw earlier about the obligation when one leaves, graduates their parents' home, they cling to their spouse. He writes, Mora al inyan b'ilus v'lo al maisa ishus. The notion of v'davak means to cling. The Torah is not describing intimacy. The Torah is not talking about cling as in the two bodies coming together. It means marriage. It means cling in becoming a unit, a nuclear unit. Rakshi kol yamav yu toreach v'amal al parnasasa v'lo al parnasas av ve'em. What it means, v'davak b'ishto, means you're working your tail off to make money to take care of your wife and children, not for your parents.
This is to be consistent with what you're...
Right, to attach yourself to your nuclear family and their needs, not at the expense. And so again, one of the considerations in the sandwich generation is not caring for parents. It's that fine line between modeling for the next generation and neglecting them so that you're turning them off, so that you're losing them, so that you're creating a sense of alienation from them. The reason to care for parents is because of what that will do for one's nuclear family, not at the expense of one's nuclear family. The Pele Yoetz, or Eliezer Papo, in Source 14, has a whole section in his Sefer about Avas Atzmo, the importance about loving yourself. We were talking before. If you are loving those around you at the expense of loving yourself, then you can't take care of anyone else. So the Pele Yoetz writes, Mishe'eno nishman b'kol davar amazik l'gufo nimtza shu oyev la'atzmo. If you're not taking care of yourself, you are your own biggest enemy. You are your own biggest enemy. So we avoid dangers, we avoid enemies, we try not to get hurt, but if you're neglecting yourself, you are your own biggest enemy. You need to build an emotional iron dome. This past Shabbos we had the inventor of Iron Dome here, and there's a physical iron dome. I once went to visit somebody I'm very close with who was in a rehab, a 30-day rehab. No one was allowed to see him from his family, but as the rabbi, I went to see him. He had a certain addiction. This was a very... mainstream, successful individual. None of you would ever guess or know who it was. But privately, he had an addiction. And he had tried to treat it. He had to go to a residential addiction care center. And I went to see him. I'm convinced he had to go through that so I could learn the following, because I learned something that changed my life on that visit to him. I asked him, how is it going? What's doing? How are things going to be different? What has he learned? And he told me that what he learned is the following. He had an elderly mother, a frail mother, and the older she got, the more difficult she became, and she was so negative to him, she was depositing all her negativity on him. Every phone call he made to her, every visit he had with her, was just, he became the target of all of her negativity. And he used to walk around and just absorb it. Every little piece of negative energy was absorbed into his being. And you can't absorb all that negativity. You'll go crazy. So he was numbing himself to it. Before a visit with his mother, after a visit with his mother, before a phone call, after a phone call. In order to create a force field to numb himself to the impact of her negativity, he had this addiction. And instead, at therapy, what he learned was to create, he didn't call it, I'm calling it, an emotional iron dome. That when negativity is coming your way, you shoot it up and you blow it up in the sky before it can ever enter your force field, before it can ever come close to you. To learn that skill of realizing, just because someone else has this negativity doesn't mean I have to absorb it. Doesn't mean I have to take it with me beyond the phone call, beyond the visit. Just because they have that negativity.
And you still love the person.
You can love the person immensely, but you divide pagilan dibura, you divide between your love of them and their negativity. I'm finishing. One more second. I'm the rabbi here. I get a little more discretion. Hold on. I just want to finish. So building an emotional iron dome, not absorbing negativity, it's not easy. It's a daily battle to do that. You interact with people who are negative, and they're trying to draw you into their negativity. This is wrong. The school's wrong. The shul's terrible. That's terrible. The country's terrible. The president's terrible. Everything's terrible. And you're terrible. And everything's terrible. And you're just drawn into that negativity, you need to have an iron dome, emotional iron dome battery. You have to recognize your own strengths and weaknesses. If you're trying to be everything for everybody in the sandwich generation, and you think you're capable of being everything for everybody, you will burn out, and you will be nothing for nobody. You need to know your strengths and your weaknesses, and complement your weaknesses by having, delegating, and inviting partners and others. You need to have boundaries. You need to communicate those boundaries, both to parents and to children, to say, this is what I can do, here's what I'm capable of, here are my boundaries, and beyond which I can't properly serve you or help you or be the person you want to be. So in the sandwich generation, rather than look as a curse, rather than look with guilt, rather than look as a burden, it's a privilege to be in a position, to have the wherewithal financially, emotionally, to be able to be that anchor, that source of support for both directions is really an incredible blessing. It's really an incredible gift. It's one that will leave you better. And I close, Hinda, I close. The following very quick story about a young woman who was going through a very, very difficult time, and she came to her mother for advice and guidance. And her mother said, come with me. They went in the kitchen, she took out three pots, and she filled all three pots with water till the water was boiling. And in one pot she put carrots, and another pot she put eggs, and in the third pot, you all know this, she put coffee. Okay, you could just finish it and I could say. The third pot, she put coffee. And she talked to her daughter to listen to her problems while the three pots boiled with water, one filled with carrots, one filled with eggs, and one filled with coffee. When it was done, she took out the carrots, the eggs, and the coffee, and she told her daughter to taste each. And her daughter tasted each. She said, Mom, what's the point? What are you getting at? She said, what do you see as the difference between these three? Feel the carrots. How did the carrots start and how did they finish? I said, well, the carrots at first were firm, and when they were put in boiling water, they became soft and mushy. What about the eggs? Well, the eggs at first were fragile, and when they went into the boiling water, they became hardened. And what about the coffee? When the coffee went into the water, it changed the water. And she said to her daughter, when you're in a difficult circumstance, when you face a challenge, you can be carrots, you can be eggs, or you can be coffee. You can be carrots and you can become soft and mushy. You can become broken by the experience. You can become eggs and you can become hardened and cynical and sarcastic. And you can become hardened by the experience. Or you can be like coffee and you can change the water. You can change the circumstance around you to make it sweet. And the choice is always ours. So being in the sandwich generation, people can feel an egg. They emerge. They can feel broken. There's nothing left. They're a carrot. But we always have the choice by the attitude we bring to decide to be a cup of coffee instead. Have a great day.